everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama,
this. I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate who you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, we're back from our trip to Dallas, and as far as I can tell, it was a textbook business trip. Steakhouse, check. We saw some sights, check. And we took care of business, double check. What was your favorite part of the trip?
Favorite part of the trip, man, was just having a lot of drinks in the stadium and watching Michigan get their ass kicked.
Very good. Very good. What was, in terms of the play on the field, we lost a number of guys on offense. We lost a number of guys on defense. Which was more impressive to you, our offensive play or defensive play?
That's really hard because on defense, we lost a lot of players, but we're starting to get some depth. We've got some guys who have at least played in the scheme and they know where to be. On offense, we obviously lost a hell of a player in Trent Richardson. And balance has always been our big thing, and we still played with balance. I mean, I guess it's a toss-up. I think I was pretty impressed for a first game of the season on the road against such a big opponent. I was pretty happy with both sides of the ball.
Definitely happy with both sides of the ball, but I think I was more impressed with the offense. Just in terms of the execution, we came out, did not have very many miscues. We played like it was the next week. We came out from the go in what appeared to be mid-season form. What were some of the key stats that really speak to you on the offensive performance?
You know, for Alabama, what has been their keys to success these past couple years, I mean, it's not rocket science, right? But it's what every team wishes they could do, but they can't successfully execute on this. I mean, we averaged 5.5 yards a carry, and we held our offense. We held Michigan to 2.4. You know, we took the air out of the ball in the fourth quarter. We had time of possession in the fourth quarter was 10.5 minutes. You know, we were 4 of 4 in the red zone, and we were balanced. I mean, sometime with about 2 or 3 minutes left in the game, you know, the commentators commented that we had 430 yards of total offense at that point, half running, half passing. And, oh, by the way, we were about 50-50 last year. And so to have the balance that we have to average twice as much as our opponent running the ball and then to be able to hold the ball for 10 minutes in the fourth quarter and be 4 of 4 in the red zone, I mean, what more can you ask?
Yeah, the metrics pretty well shake it out. We had 280 yards of offense at half, and it was exactly 140 passing and 140 rushing. You know, you can't script that kind of separation. I thought the offensive line was a force to be reckoned with. I just thought they were dominant from the go. They recreated the line of scrimmage from every play. They moved the line of scrimmage, and at one point. We had like 170 yards before contact. Everything last year was Trent's physicality and the yards that he gained after contact. We had significant yards before contact on Saturday night.
That's a good point. I mean, last year there were at least half of games that Trent Richardson and his pure will and grit, you know, got 5 or 6 yards. And like you said, he was a bowling ball, but how many times do we see him get hit in the backfield and bounce off? And so we didn't see a lot of plays in the backfield. I will say, going back and looking at the game, I'm a little bit concerned about Cyrus and DJ Fluker. When you go back and analyze, I tried to see if Steen would frustrate me, but he really didn't. And Warmack and Barrett Jones, that combination is lethal. But Cyrus and DJ are really better at the point of attack, running straight ahead. And passing situations, they had some problems on Saturday night.
They had a little. I think that, you know, that's the first game. I think the offensive line is a force. I think we can line up and we can bruise with anyone. And what about that stable of running backs? 5 backs carried the ball. We actually had 6 ball carries, or if you count McCarron, but 5 running backs touched the ball, and we had 4 of them with 8 carries apiece. That's the greatest distribution of carries we've had since 2010 when we played Duke.
Now, that distribution is awesome, and I love the running back by committee and the unselfishness of Saban's running backs. I guess the main thing I'll say is that until Cyrus seems more comfortable, him and DJ, they just didn't seem to play with good leverage sometimes, and they lost their feet and fell to the ground. And so I see us running the ball early and maybe using more play-action pass until we get later in the season to give them the proper angle so that they can kind of put a hat on a hat.
That's fair, and when they start to see SEC defensive ends, you know, the quality of opponent will, I think, will even go up and see some perhaps some greater speed at the defensive end position. I think we'll help them with our play calling, and I think they're going to continue to improve. There's something about the first game, and maybe they had a little jitters there on the edge, but I felt really good about the offensive line, and I see a lot of improvement that we'll continue to make as the season progresses. Now, Barrett Jones, he was you know, when he was breaking down just the play of the offense, you know, he was somewhat critical, and he thought we left a lot of points on the field, and
we did.
I think that's pretty impressive. I think we did, too. There were some drop balls, but, you know, you put up 41, you thoroughly dominated an opponent, and you think you left some plays on the field. That's a good place to be, right?
It is a good place to be, but I guess to be critical and to be, you know, as critical of things as we can, they were 3 of 10 on third down, and that's been an Achilles heel of this team for the past several years, is just putting teams away. Now, you and I talked at the game that, you know, he could have hung 60 on them if he wanted to, and he just didn't because of the class of the Michigan program. But to give him things to bitch about in practice this week, that 3 of 10 needs to get up to 4 or 5 of 10.
Well, it's almost the perfect storm, right? You know, we dominated the opponent on nearly every front. But gosh, there's definitely some things that you can pick out and have a sour attitude about if you'd like to.
No, that's true. Listen, there's something else that I want to point out that jumped out to me on the offensive side of the ball, and it wasn't the vision of Yeldon, it wasn't the toughness of him, but it was a couple big plays in the passing game that he was back there in the backfield picking up the blitz. And he didn't pick up the blitz a la Trent Richardson because he's just not a freaking weight room beast yet. But he gets it early that if I'm going to be on the field, I've got to block as well. And I just think that jumped out to me real quick, and I wanted your take on Fowler and his unselfishness. For him to be able to carry the ball like he did, which was better from last year, but then get up there at fullback and knock some jaws of linebackers, that takes an unselfish person to do that.
Well, you know, a couple things, and I'll hit both of those points. You know, first, it almost feels like we're burying the lead in just now talking about TJ and his play and even the approach to having that conversation. Let's just put it out there. It's the pretty obvious thing. He was electric when he got the ball. He was electric with it. There was some discussion, and you know, you and I have had some conversation on air and off air about, you know, who's truly the number two. And when Lacy's helmet fell off, and with the new rule that you have to come out, that was as pure of an assessment. Who's the guy that's going to come in that situation? Who's the number two that's going to come in? And without hesitation, Yeldon went in, and you know, he stayed in for three or four plays running the ball. And he was electric carrying
real
the ball.
Quick to that, real quick to that point, right? He didn't come out after one play. Eddie Lacy just needed one play to buckle his chin strap, right?
Right, right. And he stayed in and continued to power the ball and gain, you know, a lot of yards there in his first, you know, 2, 3, 4 carries at the beginning. I thought he was electric, but, you know, to your point, you earn playing time not only with what you do, you know, kind of with the ball, but it's also what you do when you don't have the ball and picking up blitzes. If you can't pick up the blitz, you're not going to play running back because you'll get the quarterback killed. And so the fact that Yeldon was in there in those situations was spot on. He carried the ball in the red zone. He got a number of carries in the red zone. all evidence that Saban has full trust in him and that he is definitely the number two. And Lacy better get that ankle healed up, or he could actually be passed. And I don't think that's asking for too much for that to happen. Now, you mentioned Fowler. You know, and listeners know that he's one of my favorites. I like the big bruising running back. He seemed, I don't want to say lighter than last year, but he looked more yoked. He looked more just more of a ball of muscle, if you will. And he seemed to run a little bit lower to the ground with a little more forward lean than he did last year. He just seemed to be more of a terror with the ball.
But he also had cuts, right? He also made cuts. He wasn't just a straight-ahead runner.
Yeah, and he was nimble last year, but you know, he was, you know, maybe a little bit more so Saturday night. He looks like he looks much improved over last year, and he looks like a guy we're going to find a way to put him on the field. And he was at H-back, and I know we attempted one pass to him, kind of a rush little shuffle that dropped, but he's going to be engaged in the running game, in the passing game. We had him at tailback, and then we also rolled out the power eye, which we haven't seen a whole lot of, and he lined up in fullback. And he was very selfless in that position. There was one drive where he effectively drove the ball down the field, and then he stepped up to the fullback position to allow, to block for Yeldon to come in right. And score the touchdown. Right. And he just seemed very selfless in that.
Well, I noticed that. I just wanted your take on that. You were speaking of the eye for a second. On the big touchdown by DeAndre White, just talking about formations for a moment, you know, Michael Williams was at the fullback in the power eye, and Jostin Fowler was in the, you know, in the eye back position, and that was an interesting formation because they play action passed out of that, or excuse me, they faked the handoff to Fowler, they motioned out like they could either go to Fowler or Williams, and then DeAndre White had just gotten, you know, free down the sideline. And I thought that was an interesting formation because both Williams and Fowler have shown that they can catch the ball. But you put your two best, biggest blocking guys back there on that rollout, and so you really give yourself three options, you know, because literally he could have gone in the flats to either one of those guys, but, you know, end up going to DeAndre White.
Sure, you go down the field with a wide receiver out of a power running formation. We were in a power run formation when we threw to the tight end in the end zone. And so, again, it goes to multiples within multiples. We're going to line up and look like we're going to punch you in the mouth, and we're going to catch you flinching. You know, the double move that DeAndre White made was phenomenal down the sidelines. And another little nugget there on that play that we've talked about for many years is when you see a replacement in the defensive backfield, why don't you take a shot at him? And that cornerback that he beat, now the cornerback fell, but he did fall, and he was the backup. Their starting cornerback at that position, unfortunately, is gone for the season, but he was out, and we took a shot at that backup. We've seen a lot of teams do that to us, and we have not always been real good about doing that in turn, and we surely did that Saturday night.
No, it was nice to see that. Hey, one other quick thing on offense I wanted to point out. You know, during the game, I'm sure everybody was excited to see these 10, 15 yards breaks out from the running backs. But also, you know, what you've got to do to be on the field. I just wanted to give a little kudos to a Kevin Norwood because and other not just Kevin Norwood, I guess, all the wide receivers. When I went back and looked at this footage, man, these guys were putting hats on a hat 10, 15, 20 yards down the field. And so many teams have these prima donna wide receivers that just don't get in there and do the little things like you know he talks about. And what a difference that made in some of these runs.
It's almost kind of the legacy of Julio Jones, right, that he was a star receiver, but you know he was known for blocking down the field and being a very physical receiver in the running game. And it just speaks to, you know, there's a criteria that coach has that when he recruits people at different positions, size and weights and grades and stuff, and there's a criteria that they have to pass to get on the field. And so a running back's going to pick up the blitz and the wide receiver's going to block downfield, or you can stand on the sideline and watch the game with me.
Right.
you know, we're not going to, there's not a whole lot of mincing words about it. This is just how how it's going to work. Speaking of shout-outs, I just want to give a shout-out to the walk-on halfback, Kelly Johnson, got his first start. He actually not just played, but he started the game. And then later in the game, late in the third, early in the fourth, he got a caught a little swing pass. And you could tell he was excited because rather than step out of bounds, he lowered his shoulder and took a hit. And by God, he wasn't going to step out of bounds on what may be his one, you know, only catch. You know, it looks like he's got a roll, but in his first catch of his career after being a many-year walk-on, there's no way he's stepping out of bounds.
No, I saw that. That was nice to see. And, you know, he even did some crackback blocks. We ran some traps early in the game where he was at the H-back, and he had to peel in there behind Barrett Jones and take a linebacker, unsuspecting linebacker from the blind side, and he laid the wood a couple times.
He did. He's going to be fun, a fun one to watch, I think. When he lines up and he goes in motion, he's kind of herky-jerky, he's kind of spastic in his movement. I think he's going to be fun to watch, but he certainly brings some excitement to the position, and sometimes it's just little stuff like that that fires up the rest of the team.
No, it does. Now, one other thing I will say, you did notice as the game went on that Harrison Jones was in there more and more in the two tight end set. And so I'm happy for Kelly Johnson. Everything you just said is awesome. But I do think maybe lacking some of the size, that Harrison Jones' chance to get on the field is doing some of this dirty work late in the game when we're taking air out of the ball.
Oh, absolutely. And Vogler was in there, and of course Michael Williams. And so we rotated, you know, quite a number of guys at the tight end position. Speaking of rotation, you and I both thought that Ryan Kelly would be the first lineman off the bench. I think the second or third snap of the game, Steen blew a shoe and had to come out, and it was interesting to see Chad Lindsey come in that position. I don't know if that's more representative of Kelly being hurt some in camp or if Lindsey's truly that next guy, but just wanted to call that out. We had made a statement about that in the preseason.
It will be interesting to watch this because I think we are in the situation where I don't think the coaches will hesitate. They showed us last year, you know, whenever they brought in Alpha McCullough, you know, for Steen a couple times at guard for a couple starts. I don't think they're going to hesitate to move a Barrett Jones if need be this season. I mean, just to touch on this real quick, if a Cyrus struggles or if a DJ or a Steen struggles, I think you could see Barrett Jones, you know, start at any one of those other three positions.
Yeah, that could be. We'll see how that plays out. I'm not in a hurry to remove any of those guys from the lineup.
I'm just saying that it's nice to have that in your bag of tricks, that you got a Barrett Jones that you can move if you need to.
Absolutely. I've got one more thing on the offensive observations before we move to our mini game balls, and I just want to give a hats off to McCarron again. It maybe feels like burying the lead on this, but he had a good game. His numbers weren't tremendous, but the biggest thing that stood out to me in watching it live in Dallas and seeing some of the replays on the big screen, but then watching the game at home again, he just seemed to have a real personal dynamic with Saban. It was, you know, not necessarily Saban getting on to him, like a player-coach relationship. They just seemed to have a rapport. McCarron would walk up and put his arm around him, and they talk almost have a more adult conversation than a player, a coach talking down to a player-type conversation. And I think that's...
You mean the way he used to talk to him?
Well, you know, there was no slapping on the ass and profanities, and, you know, part of that's just a function of the successful ball game. But just their interpersonal dynamic seemed evolved, and I think that's representative of McCarron showing some leadership, and I think the players see that too, and that just exudes the leadership, and I think that's going to be a presence in the huddle that at different points in the season can help carry us along.
Okay.
Well, let's roll out our favorite feature, the mini game ball. And for those maybe new to the podcast, you know, anyone can give you a player of the game and sort of the headline players. Tom and I like to peel back the covers a little bit and look a little deeper for a player that that we think made a contribution to the game, but someone that may not necessarily be making some of the headlines. So, Tom, who are you awarding your mini game ball?
It's going to have to go to Michael Williams. You know, we've had so many good tight ends while Saban has been here, guys that have just stepped up and done the dirty work and just made the plays. And as I went back and looked at that game, I'm glad, you know, he got a touchdown on his one reception. I hope that we use him more. I think he can be a weapon. I think he needs
to
catch
him again. Well, we went to him again, and it was just out of his hands. But we attacked downfield with him again.
I'd like to see that five or six times a game. But I guess when I go back and look at the film, because especially with Cyrus, you know, Cyrus did have the knee injury. He's still a sophomore. He still doesn't have the games under his belt. When I went back and looked at that film, when you sat there and watched those plays between Barrett Jones and Warmack and Michael Williams, they were just paving the road, man. They were just steaming down the field. And then for Williams to be able to line up at fullback and block unselfishly at fullback or be in the H-back or be in the two tight end set or flank out wide, I mean, he gives us a lot of luxuries there, man. I just like the game that he's bringing, the whole package that he's bringing to the field.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's an outstanding player, and he is the right mix of size and physicality at the point of attack. Can get downfield and lead some rush, but then he can catch the ball too. He has nice soft hands for a guy his size, so I think that's a good selection. I'm going to recover some ground here, but I want to give my mini game ball, I guess, to the third team running back, if you will, and that's Jalston Fowler. He wore many hats, and it looks like he's going to wear many hats. I don't know that I'll be able to give him mini game balls for many games, and so I'm going to take advantage of it right here. You know, he lined up at tailback, at fullback, at halfback. It was very selfless. You know, relented the ball to TJ to score the touchdown after he did all the heavy lifting, but he just seemed to run with a tenacity. He seemed much more physical than he was even last year. He seemed a little leaner, and he had a little more forward lean in his run, and just seemed had a nastiness about him, I guess, running the ball. And so he's someone that I was excited to see him play the way that he did, and I very much look forward to his play through the rest of the season.
Well, I just have to add to my two cents to this real quick. There was one particular play where he made a cut at the line of scrimmage to get away from a defensive end, and then decided to quickly show some burst and split through Warmack and Barrett Jones on probably his long run of the day of 18 yards. He would not have hit that hole last year, and he finished with 8.5 yards a carry on his 8 carries. It's pretty damn good for 8 carries.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's representative of the stat line, I think, that he's going to get. He can certainly break one. We've seen him do that before. I just think he's going to be the guy that just all of a sudden, where did he get all of his yards? Where did he get all his production? And he's just going to get it here or there, and he's going to bloody some noses as he does it.
What do you think about defense, jumping onto that side of the ball? What jumps out at you first on defense?
I tell you what really jumps out to me is, you know, how many times do you see a cornerback really be a force, a terror at cornerback? You know, if you think about the position, a lot of times your cornerback, their best play will almost go quiet. It'll almost go unnoticed. If a star cornerback has shut down a star receiver, then you may not hear his name called. But D. Milliner was a force at corner. He had 4 or 5 tackles. He had 4 pass breakups. He had an INT.
Right.
And he actually injured Denard Robinson on that interception return. Robinson tried to lower his shoulder and actually injured himself trying to tackle Milliner. He was just a force from the cornerback position.
He was, and I think he's a little pissed off. If you think about last year, Daquan Menzie came back healthy, and when we were in a true two-corner formation, he would come out of the game, and it would be Daquan Menzie and Dre Kirkpatrick. And so, you know, Javi, physical guy. Dre showed some physicality last year that we had not seen from him. Milner is taking up this, you know, he has taken up the pride of I'm going to be the next physical corner that Alabama's going to have.
Yeah, and he performed well. Now, he did get beat once. He slipped on a play, and he owned it. He acknowledged that he had slipped and let the receiver
get behind him. That showed some maturity, right?
Absolutely. He owned that as part of everything else that he did, and so he's definitely realizes that he has some things that he can improve upon. But, you know, boy, he put up an incredible stat line coming out of the cornerback position, so that was quite impressive.
Well, hey, listen, I just want to say real quick, just to jump in on Milner real quick before we jump to something else. You know, you and I were sitting there having breakfast on Sunday morning, and we hear a quote from Milner that this is the most that I was thrown at in my career. And so you and I brought up the question that we need to add, you know, we need to throw this out for the listeners. You know, Deion Ballou was the JUCO transfer, you know, who has finally made his way to Alabama, who's starting in his first game of his career, and you've got a 3-year guy over here in Milner, and Michigan's going to throw his way more times than he's ever been thrown at? What do you think was up with that?
Well, that's something that you really have to question. You have a quarterback that is not really known for his accuracy. He seems to throw at receivers more than he throws to them. And so why am I going to pick on the more experienced, the more seasoned cornerback in a Nick Saban defense? It seems like I would want to pick on the new guy. And in fact, they went after Ballou, and he did get beat on a double move. But it just makes you wonder, why would you go so many times so aggressively at Milner when you have another guy that, hey, maybe he doesn't know the playbook as well as the experienced guy. Why don't we pick on this guy here on the other side?
No, that's true. Hey, there's something else that I wanted to kind of touch on as far as the game, and that was the play of Trey DePriest. You know, obviously Nico's the senior. Nico has bided his time. He has waited behind Rolando. He has waited behind Dante Hightower. You know, you would think this is his time to shine and be in there predominantly with Mosley, with Trey stepping in there, you know, spot duty. You and I saw Trey come in last year as a true freshman and look lost as he could possibly look in the Florida game. You know what? He knows the playbook. He is a little bit faster than Nico. And that speed and physicality, he's got the same physical skills as Nico, but he's a step faster. And I think Nico's going to be relocated to the third guy.
Well, we talked in the preseason about Trey DePriest as a guy that I thought was going to be a player. And, you know, maybe you weren't so high on him back then. And so I guess I'm glad to hear you coming around.
Well, he's just a step quicker. And yeah, he was just a step quicker to the ball than Nico. Finished with a pretty decent stat line. You know, another guy that I want to throw out there real quick that most of the listeners might not have seen flash was Pagan. I mean, Pagan's a guy that played as a true freshman. There was only 7 true freshmen that played last year. That number's getting smaller and smaller under what Nick Saban is building. But he came in and limited duty and finished with 2 solos and 2 assists and a tackle for loss. I mean, he was in the top 5 on the defensive stat line, and he only played a few plays.
Pagan's a terror. I mean, he came in, you know, from the bench, and, you know, cold. We're talking later in the game, and he came in and started making plays just right from the jump. Pagan is an unholy terror.
I think he is really going to be that next guy behind Dial in that rotation. What did you think about Hubbard? I was, you know, he sat there and finished with 1 solo, no assist. He held contain. I almost think he was too worried about them beating in his head, you better not let Denard Robinson get outside of you. And so I think he kind of played on eggshells and just wasn't able to play his game like he would with a pocket quarterback.
He was in there on tackles. He was a lot of times the second one there. But, you know, Nick Saban made a point of saying that this is the most mobile quarterback. This may be the biggest playmaker at the quarterback position since Cam Newton. And a lot of people look at that on the surface and say, well, my, that's quite a compliment that Saban has for Denard. And I look at that as, sure, that's a compliment for Denard, But that is a message to our defensive ends and our Jack linebacker. Set that edge. Set that freaking edge if that's all you do. And if he was on eggshells doing that,
that's what he did. Yep, that's what he did.
There's no Chavis Williams. There's no Alex Watkins. There's no somebody chasing a ghost or following a pulling guard. He set the edge, and then he set the edge, and he did it consistently, and Denard had no place to go on the outside. So my point
real quick is when we go against the pocket passer who's no threat to run, I want to see Hubbard unleash. I think Hubbard was playing a little within himself because he was scared out of his mind that Nick Saban was going to chew his ass out if Denard breaks for 15 yards around his corner.
I think he did his responsibility. Am I going to have to give him a mini game ball here?
He did his responsibility.
I mean, you know, there's one thing to read a stat sheet and say, well, guy, he had 3 sacks in A-Day, and gosh, he didn't have any, and so he must have had a bad game. I don't think he had a bad game. I think he had a good game. It's just his primary responsibility was not a sexy responsibility. Go set that edge, run 3 yards upfield, and contain. And then someone else will clean up the mess.
That's true, but I was looking for a little more. Hey, one of the things I wanted to point out real quick is you and I have been following football for a long time. When Miller intercepted that pass, what was up with that, man? Is that a new rule in football that you can just knock the shit out of the Michigan receiver and just knock him out of bounds and then go pick the ball off?
It seems like maybe that could
rule that nobody is that just a new is that one of those new rule changes for 2012?
That was definitely some physical play. I don't know what kind of hand back and forth that they had, and he definitely seemed to run him out of bounds. There was some physicalness there. I don't know if the official just missed it. It seemed like potentially that could have been flagged, but he knocked that receiver out of bounds for sure.
Hey, one thing on that play that I wanted to touch on real quick, it kind of like the wide receivers blocking downfield, and it just goes back to Coach Saban saying do the little things. You know how we watch in practice or watch warming up before a game, those stupid drills where they intercept the ball and they all turn and run the other way?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, they just keep doing that over and over. Well, when he intercepted that ball, he was at about the 42-yard line. And the next thing you know, I know, I see 3 Michigan guys pancaked on their ass. And I'm like, okay, I have got to go back and see who did this. Any idea? Take a wild guess as who's the one that did the pancake blocks.
I'm going to throw out Vinny, but I wouldn't be surprised if Lester and Mosley were knocking some people on their butts too.
You would never guess this. The first guy I saw do it, Brandon Ivory.
Okay.
The next guy on the pancake, Dial. The last guy on the pancake, Damian Square.
All right. So the defensive lineman.
So my point is even the big defensive lineman.
Furthest from the ball.
Yes,
furthest from seeing.
Yes. Are getting an angle and literally just knocked their guys on their ass, which is what allowed Milner to get back to about the 10-yard line to put the hit on Denard. And so it was like, oh, my gosh, even this, these guys get it. They just do the little things, and that's just so cool and refreshing to see.
I like to see Milner when he caught that ball, he turned around, and he had some open space in front of him. He just kind of reached up and adjusted his helmet and took off. I just look like, he was strapping it on, ready to go to work. And he, like you said, he drove it, ran it down to the 10, evaded some tackles, and then actually put a lick on Denard. So that was a tremendous play.
What else jumps out on you on defense?
I got a couple things. So just jump out on any of these. We saw Nico and Mosley on the field together. I kind of grinned when a couple formations when we saw that. So I was really pleased to see them on the field together. As DeBrees kind of earned some more run. That may actually create more of an opportunity for Nico than Mosley to be on the field together, as maybe that's an opportunity to give DePriest some rest. But it's good to see those guys on the field together. The safety, you probably want to spend some time with this. We played a lot more nickel safety than nickel corner. We've seen last year a lot of corner nickel. We bring in the fifth DB that's a corner, but gosh, and we did that a couple of times, especially early. But most of the times that we were in nickel Saturday night, we had a third safety in, and I thought that was a pretty interesting formation.
It was, and it just speaks to John Fulton. I mean, because obviously Travell Dixon, for those that don't know his name, you know, he was a big JUCO recruit that came in with Ballou. And, you know, he just left a few weeks ago for personal reasons. And you and I immediately said, yeah, the personal reasons is it looks like Deion Ballou is going to take that starting cornerback job. And he's a JUCO and I'm a JUCO. And I need to go somewhere and find some playing time. Well, John Fulton came in highly touted. And so has Ha-Ha. I mean, you know, what a nice problem to have. But I'm just a little surprised that Fulton didn't get more opportunities last night.
Yeah, I am too. And I don't know if it's a function of the running quarterback, and we weren't, and he's not an accurate passer. And so let's bring someone in, bring another safety in to kind of help with some tackling up court close to the line of scrimmage. I don't know if it's more that or if it's more, you know, where's our next best, defensive backs. I don't know. Geno Smith's a freshman, and he got some run at corner. I know that he's been practicing, particularly at the money position, and so he got a little bit of run. We saw a lot of Nick Perry. I was a little bit surprised to see that. I think that was
surprising.
That had a little bit to do with Lester getting banged up, but he did get quite a lot of run, and so that was good. I thought Vinny was phenomenal. He was everywhere. He was calling the defense. He was aligning defensive backs. I saw him a couple times motioning people that had lined up incorrectly. He put the pressure on the quarterback a couple of times. He was sound in coverage. He actually saved the quarterback. He was used for bracket coverage a couple of times with over the top with a cornerback, and he saved a touchdown when Ballou, bit on a move, and then he just crushed our running back on an option play. I just thought he was everywhere.
He is a student of the game. I am obviously still not as high on him as you are, but I think that he made some big plays. I think he doesn't have the speed that I'd like to have at the safety position, and so when he blitzed from the corner, you know, he wasn't able to get there to affect the play in the backfield, but he makes up for his lack of speed with his instincts and just being a student of the game and just knowing where to be.
Yeah. I thought just, again, just talking about the defensive play overall, we held Michigan to, the big thing against LSU is that we, kept them from crossing the 50. And of course, Michigan crossed the 50, but they didn't cross the 50 until after we had put up 31 points. So they didn't cross the 50 until the game was already over.
Yeah,
as far as that goes.
At that point, it was in the books. Hey, there's something else that I wanted to kind of ask you about is where is the pressure going to come from with this year's team? Because obviously we got up big and we put them in passing situations. And we don't have the luxury of Courtney Upshaw and Dante Hightower. And so I just wanted to quickly ask you, late in the game, we got to see the presence of DJ Pettaway. And DJ Pettaway, in his one opportunity, got to contribute on a half a sack. And in that formation, they had Denzin Duvall, they had Square, they had Dial, and they had Pettaway. And I just found it interesting that they brought in Duval and Pettaway on the edges in that pass rush package. We might see more of that package.
Sure, absolutely. They could be specialists. Eric Anders was a starter in some rabbit package, and so we've got all of these subunits and sub packages where players like that can be starters in these packages that we maybe run once a game or once every couple of games, but they get a lot of work at those positions. There's a lot of places that we're going to get coverage, get pressure, and so I don't want to necessarily sound like I'm just reading down the roster, but I think Adrian Hubbard is going to be a force. I think he's going to apply pressure. You know, we saw Pagan. We've already mentioned him. He's a guy that's going to get some inside rush. And he is a big fella. He wears that number 8, and so that just kind of makes you want to think he's a smaller guy with that single-digit number.
Right.
But, right. You know, he could wear 98, and it would fit across him. He's a big boy, and I think he's going to be a source of pressure. You know, we're going to run some blitzes, and, you know, we blitz the safeties a couple times. We're going to blitz, sort of the traditional places, I think. But I think we're going to be able to manufacture and get pressure on them. I think that for sure.
I just mean in the standard third and long package from the front four. It looks to me like Petway is going to bring a presence to a chance to be one of those four guys in obvious third and long situations. And he affected the quarterback better than some of the other guys did earlier in the game.
Sure. I think there's an opportunity to do that. I think, you know, when we started subbing in some of the younger guys, we were probably a little more aggressive in terms of getting after them than we were early. But yeah, I think we'll be able to get pressure on him, and I think he'll be one of the guys that will be in there and have the opportunity to do that. I want to call out just one thing on Ballou. Both Milliner slipped, and that's what allowed a big pass play, and Ballou got beat on a double move, and that's what allowed another big pass play. Vinny saved the touchdown, but that was another big play. One of the things that it was harder to notice watching it live, but as I was watching it on the replay on television, there was a lot of shots that they were showing of injury to Denard Robinson, and it looked like, you know, he is really banged up, and he may struggle to throw the ball with any zip. And I think our coaches knew that, and they were coaching up our cornerbacks to you know, don't worry about the double move necessarily, because we don't think he can fling it.
Right.
Turns out it could, but I wonder if that was Ballou truly just getting beat, or if he was sold on the move because he thought the quarterback had limited arm strength. I don't know, but as I was just watching it,
right,
I maybe give him a pass on that, because it seemed like Robinson on the sideline was really wincing and spending a lot of time with the trainers.
Right. Well, for those that don't know much about Ballou, you know, the talk out there is he is the best cover corner that we have on our team right now. And so I hope he continues to pick up the defensive schemes, and I hope we see some of this blanket coverage, you know, more and more.
Yeah, and then the fact that each of our cornerbacks, you know, got beat, I don't think that's exposing us. Hey, it's the first game of the season. We were up. But I think that's an opportunity that, you know, we can celebrate the fact that we played well, that we won. But, hey, individually, we've got some things we still need to work on.
Sure. Well, who would you give the mini game ball to on the defensive side of the ball?
I'm giving my mini game ball to Brandon Ivory. He's a guy that we didn't know how much in the rotation that he would be, but he seemed that he's really dropped some weight, become a little more physical. And when Jesse Williams had the mild concussion and had to come out, Brandon seemed to get a lot of run and seemed to play with a lot of physicality. You pointed out one of his plays, pancaking someone when he got to kind of return the favor, if you will, with Milliner's
right
pick. He just seems like a guy that really stepped up, gave some really good contribution, and I think that's going to bode well for some depth up front in the middle of the line as the season progresses.
Well, he definitely needs some extra plays. If Jesse wants to fake an injury in the next 2 weeks so he can get an extra 5 or 10 snaps so he can lose that extra 20 pounds, we'll be doing even better.
Who are you giving your mini game ball to?
I'm going to have to give it to Ed Stinson. You know, Stinson was in a battle with Dial for spring and summer. And Stinson's a guy who's been there a little while. And he stayed with it, and he earned the job. And I think he played pretty well. And he set the edge, but he also showed a physical presence, had a tackle for loss. And we're going to need him this year. His play was good. I enjoyed watching him play.
Yeah, he's another one of those guys that I think that's going to be able to give some inside pass rush, you know, in the third and long situation. So, yeah, he was battling out with Quentin Dial, like you said, and earned the position. He's a good one. That's a good pick. Anything on the specialist stand out to you?
You know, there's a couple stats just very quickly. You know, Nick Saban is so good on special teams, and he's going to get it right with these guys once he's had them long enough to work with them. It was very refreshing to see that we average 47 yards a punt. How freaking awesome is that, man? We averaged 42 last year. We've been averaging in the low 40s. We averaged 47 yards a punt. We only had four punts. Two were over 50 yards, and two were inside the 20. Both for fair catches. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah. I to see this stat line from Mandel, if this is something that we can see every week, then that's going to bode well for us. Like you said, four punts, average 47. He had a long of 59, two inside the 20. Only one punt was returned, but only for 3 yards. I mean, you bundle that together. Now that's partly the coverage team, too, but that's getting some loft on the ball, some hang time, so we can get some coverage down. If he can repeat that kind of stat line, then that's going to bode very well. In terms of the field goals, I felt really good about what we did there. We did miss a 50-yarder plus, but it had the distance. It was just a little bit off. But Foster did hit another 50-plus yarder, which felt really good. He looked less like a collapsing folding chair as he was kicking the ball, and we talked about him last year. His form seemed to be much improved. And, of course, from the inside the 30, Shelley was money. And so it was good to see each of our kickers nail one.
It was good to see. It was good to see for their confidence, and I was glad Foster was able to come in there and Saban could rely on him. And I'm glad we had the opportunity for him to try a long field goal in the game so he could try to, get his confidence back.
Well, especially after he missed one, you don't often have chances for multiple 50-yard field goals. And so when he missed one, I'm glad we were able to get him back out there and him make it. That bodes well for his confidence. He can walk out of that game knowing that he performed well, and hopefully he can build on that as the season goes on.
Absolutely.
Tommy, next week we strap it on against Western Kentucky. What are your thoughts of that game?
You know, I hope to see a lot of players play. Some of the guys that got banged up this week, I hope Brandon Ivory gets some extra snaps. I hope Jesse Williams is not, really not in there very long. I hope Robert Lester's not in there more than he has to. I want these young guys like Pagan to get more plays and more snaps because we're going to need them as we get later in the year.
Yeah, I agree. I want to see more of the younger guys play. I think the key to this game, and not necessarily that it's ever going to be in jeopardy, but it's our players getting their heads back into the game. This was a bowl-like atmosphere. There's a lot of stamp tickets to Miami coming out of this game. So I think the players need to get their heads on straight. They need to be ready for the long regular season, and this is just going to be the big next step. I think it's potentially going to be a boring game, except for people like us who like to watch the depth and the rotation of the younger players.
That's going to be the fun part. Yeah, that's going to be the fun part.
That's absolutely. As people are falling out of the stadium for one of the six, seven home games, they get to pay all that money to go see. Why they would leave early, I don't know, but they will be. And that's going to be potentially one of the more exciting times of the ball game, is to see what the rotations are, see who the younger guys are, and see how they're developing. But I think it's going to be a nondescript 34-10 point ball game. It's going to be the kind of game that will play well. It's never in jeopardy, but you'll leave the stadium asking, gosh, if they did that to Michigan last week, how were they only able to do this against the Hilltoppers of Western Kentucky?
I think we're going to hang some more points on them. I think we're going to probably break 50. I think that's not going to be – that's not Saban style, but it's going to be one of those accidental 50-yard breakout runs from Fowler where Saban's pissed off that his shoelaces didn't come untied and he fell at the 20.
So I think Michigan State a couple years ago?
Yeah, we're going to get a garbage touchdown that's going to piss Saban off because we hung 50 on him. And this defense is going to take some pride and say, by damn, we're not giving up, 14 points this week. And I think we're going to see something like a 52-7 ball game.
Okay. Well, I hope you're right. That'll be a little more exciting, and that'll be fun to see some of the young guys, get out there and maybe help put up some of those points. All right, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.